tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
That's right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to AfterBuzz TV as we discuss Childhood End, the miniseries on Sci-Fi Network, a three-parter, and we will be discussing all three parts today, and obviously it is spoiler-filled. So if you have not seen it, pause. Pause. Don't click away.
I mean, thus the review and after show.
That's right. Good point, Zach Wilson.
It's after, so.
That is the voice of Zach Wilson, sci-fi resident nerd.
That is an apt way to describe me. Hey, guys, I'm Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson.
And we have Keith Black.
And my name is Keith Black. You can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black.
And how would you describe yourself? You're one of the newer hosts here at AfterBuzz TV, and so I don't have kind of a moniker for you yet.
Yeah, how would I describe myself? I like to say pleasant. Yeah, that's always something you look for as being pleasant.
So are the overlords, but sure.
Yeah, we'll yeah. I think they were. I'm probably equally as pleasant as they are with my intentions.
Okay.
See, mix.
There's pause.
there's no way to decipher that.
I'm gonna
slide a little over. All right. Now, obviously, there's so many kind of factors that go into it, and you know, we'll try to hit on as many as we can. But truth be told, this was one of those things. I commend sci-fi in the way they did it. There's a lull in TV, and you know they managed to kind of put this in, and I thought that was a great strategy. The thing that didn't work for me was I was ready to take a quick break, so I don't, you know, it wasn't on the agenda to do this. And then I said, you know what, we should really do Childhood End. And so we've kind of banded together, and I believe in about 3 or 4 days we put this whole thing together.
Yeah.
So if there's some if there's some stuff that we miss, you know, it's not our intention. We're trying to get as deep as we can, but you know what, that's what the comments are for, and we'll continue the discussion there. So,
absolutely.
But let's start with the overall impressions of what you thought of it. And what kind of drew you into this, wanting to talk about it, wanting to see it, so on and so forth?
Well, I read the book a while back. I couldn't tell you exactly what. It was either high school or early in college. But Arthur C. Clarke's one of my favorite authors. The 2001 series, like all the way through 3001, I think is amazing. Rendezvous with Rama is another one of his great books. They all have that similar theme of an alien, what happens when we interact with an alien force and what that force could be, good or bad. Mm-hmm. And questions of how that affects humanity. Childhood's End being his first novel has a lot of those elements in it. You can sort of see the seeds. So I wanted to see what an adaptation would look like. I wanted to for years, because the whole thing with the overlords and all that is this big story and big concept that isn't really it's so intricate and heady in a way that most modern sci-fi is not. So I was very curious how sci-fi was going to handle that. And I mostly liked it. I really liked how it kicked off. I thought the way that they did it towards the end could have been a little bit better, and we can talk about more of the specifics of that later. But overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I'm just overall an incredibly just immense sci-fi fan. I get into it, and anything that's based around a scientific basis, and you're like, all right, this is something that could potentially be in the future tense. It could be happening now with where we are in the world in relation to science. Anything like that where we can base a whole story of under the overlords coming in another planet, or even us having that communication and turning into utopian society, that's something that could be feasible if everyone put their minds together. So for me, that's fascinating, and it just makes me really want to get involved. And oh, how can I not watch this? This is something that intrigues me to the max. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I like about it is, you know, the theme of utopia, and it's utopia is such a weird term because it all matters upon perspective. Like, we could be living in a utopian world right now, for some people, others not so much. And so I always liked that idea. And what intrigued me, I read the book in ninth grade, freshman year, and part of our assignment was to kind of, it was like a book review, but we did it as a group, so everyone split off into groups, and I was joking with you guys, we did a Jerry Springer sketch of this, where the Overlord was not the most likable person in the Jerry Springer skit, and so it just became crazy in that way, and we managed to get an A, which I liked when you used Jerry Springer and got an A.
Definitely creative. I'll give you that.
It was.
Ninth graders coming in hot.
And you know, I thought the themes, you know, were really, really well done in the book, and so I always kind of, just the notion of the Overlords being, you know, the iconic devil and how that played into it. So it always kind of stuck with me. I never became obsessed over it, but it was always intriguing to me. And so I was curious how they were going to do this, and I'm glad Sci-Fi put money towards it in the right way. You know, and I thought overall they succeeded. From what I've read, the reviews, people seem to think overall it succeeded nicely.
Yeah, I mean, just from seeing what popped up in my Twitter feed this week, like, people are enjoying it. They had fun with it. I mean, there have been so many attempts over the years to make this into a movie. Kubrick wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And then he couldn't get the rights. So they're like, all right, let's do original. 2001 Space Odyssey. Let's make that.
Which, I mean, you know, it kind of begs the question, like, imagine if he did it, because, I mean, 2001 Space Odyssey is so well regarded. Yeah. So
it would not have been this clear.
No, it would not.
A lot of mystique.
And this, I mean, this story has a lot of stuff that's not perfectly, like, clear and laid out for you in terms of especially in terms of the Overmind and what they're going to do. What the purpose is that everyone is fulfilling here. That's, like, the big question that we don't really get answered. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have just been expanded upon and become a much bigger part. Or just they wouldn't have answered. You wouldn't have seen the Overmind or anything like that in a Kubrick version of this story.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And you did you read the book? I don't think you answered.
No, I didn't.
You did,
I did not. No.
One of the things that I did find interesting, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on the book, but that it kind of started off as short stories, and that kind of led into this book, which I actually did not know, unless I forgot it.
It was one short story, right? And then it was, and then he decided to expand it.
Yeah, it began. It was called Guardian Angel, written in 1946. And then it was expanded into a novel incorporating first parts of Earth and the Overlords being kind of what the short story really was. That became that sort of chunk or the chapter. And again, for me, it's been several years since I read the book, so I'm not going to... Yeah. I don't quite have the full specifics, but we will talk about various book-to-adaptation comparisons. So let's start with, you know, before we'll break it down in terms of the nights, you know, or episodes, whatever you guys want to call them. But let's start with just kind of the overall cast and crew that took part in this. You know, who stood out most to you? Was it Milo? Was it Ricky?
I mean, I think Charles Dance as Karellen. I mean, for me, that was he was so impactful, and he moved every scene that he was in that it actually led you to believe. You're like, this Mystique, this gentleman could actually be the personification of the first visitor we have. Like, he was believable, and he wasn't over the top. He was dressed as similar to the devil, which would spook everybody, but in that moment, he still didn't come across as frightening, aggressive, or devilish. He didn't have those qualities. He still came across as soothing, even in the harshest of times. And I thought, for me personally, I'm like, this guy, I mean, he took a role and just absolutely knocked it out of the park, and sitting in a chair for 3 hours every day and still being able to bring it, getting makeup. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he was a standout performance behind all that makeup. I mean, it's easy to forget who you're looking at when you have that kind of makeup and like light CGI, which I think it looked mostly practical.
Yeah, I think so.
With like, I think like a little with the CGI to help fill it in, but it looked really good. So you were able to just like step out from you weren't taken out from the production. It was good. I thought that Mike Vogel, who played Ricky, did a great job just being that, like, it was like Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. Like, that was who this character was, this version of Ricky. Mm-hmm. And I thought he had a great stand up performance. So did pretty much everybody in this thing.
Yeah,
there's no real like shortcomings.
I agree. I took to Milo because number one, the story opens up with him, mm-hmm. and it ends with him, and so you know he's the one that kind of completes the circle for me. So I gravitate towards him the most, and just his solo act of trying to like. You know, the scientific curiosity and keeping that alive. Obviously, everyone is kind of doing it, questioning it in some sort of sense, but I gravitated towards him the most.
Yeah, actually acting upon it.
Yeah.
And one thing about Mike Vogel as Ricky, I really wanted to get to know why he was chosen more, and that's one of the things I really wish they would have, dove into a little bit more, is why specifically they chose this farmer to be. I mean, they listed because, he's courageous, he's brave, people, lead him, the world will follow him, but like, what, out of everybody on the planet, him or it was the blind lady? Like,
from Korea.
Yeah, they ate a blind lady from Korea. And I would have been more like, okay, well, whoa, like, we seem a little different in our comparisons. Like, what are our similarities? Why was I chosen for this role? I think if we would have gone a little bit more in depth into who he was, you would have felt more.
So let's open up there, so that's part of, the first night of everything, or I call it night one, episode one, mm-hmm. whatever you guys want to call it. And part of the theme for me was free will and choice, right? Mm-hmm. And in this regard, the Overlords chose him. In the book, they chose the Secretary General of the United Nations, mm-hmm. which makes the most sense if you ask, like, who's the world leader? Yeah. Okay, that you can argue him, the Secretary General. Yeah. So it was a bit of a departure. I think part of it for me, not story wise, was that from a production budget, perhaps it was easier to film on a farm than it was at the at the United Nations.
Yeah.
but from a story perspective, it was interesting. Yeah, it kind of humanized it a little bit more. Where if you're at the United Nations, not everyone can relate to that side of things, whereas a farmer is much easier to grasp in what they're dealing with day to day.
Yeah, I think also the big difference between like when this was written in the 50s, the UN was like this peacekeeping force that was new to the scene. Like, everyone's like, oh, this could like be the true world peacekeeping force. Today, where the UN is the butt of most jokes. Like, we don't think of the UN as particularly the place that houses the most effective people in the world.
Yeah.
But I think that there is something to the small town leader, just from the writing perspective, picking that person, and especially for an American audience, that's like, we all want to think like, oh yeah, like,
it could be me,
Johnny Goodoer, like, he's the voice of America and the world. I liked that they threw in the blind lady, though, because I think that even though they picked this person, it says something about what the Overlords were going for, mm-hmm. because it wasn't just, we needed somebody who, like, looked pretty and, like, was well-spoken. It was, they needed a face that the world could trust and latch onto in a way that, like, you couldn't trust the president.
Because,
like, everybody has too many variables about what they feel about the president mm-hmm. of the United States. But this guy, you don't really sense an agenda.
True, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Nor would you from the little old blind lady. Like, that would have been a different way to pass the message along. It's just like a little old blind lady who can just can pass messages along to the world.
And give power to those that don't want it, because they're usually the best to lead. Mm-hmm. Same type mm-hmm. of situation.
And, I also like that, since I mentioned free will and choice, like, the fact that it was his choice to take, that, whatever we're gonna call it, the
little vial item.
Yeah, the vial and kind of, he wasn't necessarily 100% compliant with everything, mm-hmm. but he went along with it, and I really liked that. What did you guys think initially was kind of contained within this vial?
I don't think I believed it was a world virus. I don't think they would come do all the staging of that and be like, gotcha, and release virus. Like,
it'd be funny, though.
Like a big practical joke. They're like, man, we got Earth so good. But I did think it was going to be something along the lines of like whether it stimulates who he was, mm-hmm. or you know, making Ricky a little bit more powerful, more knowledgeable, or able to communicate telepathically. Something along those lines. I think I got a little bit more mystical with it, hoping that it's going to be like, okay, I've seen a lot of superhero movies. Let's see what's going to happen in this situation. Because having not read the book, all of this was fresh eyes for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was more a lot of just predicting and guessing some that could be completely outrageous. You know, but we're in sci-fi, so it's kind of welcomed.
I kind of just thought it was going to be like an intergalactic space phone. Like, that's honestly, I looked at it, and that was like my first thought was, this is a communication device. Yeah. But like then... there's got to be more to it. So I liked that it was a good thing to throw into play, especially with seeing how like the government reacts mm-hmm. to it. Was very human. Like that's what I could see happening.
Yeah, that was a good interaction. Yeah, they didn't have a gun on me, but you do.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
and I also like that Krellin gave him the option. He's like, "What if I want to throw this in the river? Throw it in the river." You know, this is your call. We are here to help, but we're still leaving choice up to you and free will up to you. They're not coming down, although they can cure everything. They're not forcing it on them. So I think that definitely led to Ricky being more trusting than, you know, getting the gun pulled out.
Yeah, which ultimately, by the end of the story, is debatable.
True.
Whether or not they did give everyone free choice and whether whether intentions were good or not, mm-hmm. or the results were good or not. That's I think the point of the whole story is... we're given utopia, but did we ever want it?
Yeah, which is what brought up the segregated society within thing. They're like, we want to live our lives in a world that is completely free will, that is filled with disease, that is filled with air. Like, because for them, that's living. It's creativity. It's science. It's exploration.
Bad, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about New Athens a bit more. What I also liked about it was kind of a slight departure, but in a good way, right? So as we talked about Ricky the farmer, we talked about the government side of it, but then you also had the journalistic side of it through Hugo, and he's the one who dubbed them the overlords, and he out of all people that I thought would like go off and colonize, I thought he'd be the one to start New Athens in some weird way, but
yeah.
What did you guys think of him and that kind of interaction?
Yeah, I mean, he was aggressive from the beginning, and I think that he was a great, part of symbolism for all those people that would have an aggressive reaction to what was happening. He felt like things were being taken from him and forced upon him, and rather than just going like, okay, well, this is the situation now, we can't fight back, he still was adamant about fighting back and believed wholeheartedly that he was right in what he was doing, and I think that that's something that a lot of people will be able to relate to. And so he was a great way to symbolize those feelings for the characters that would be vengeful against, you know, the overlords coming down. So mm-hmm. I enjoyed his role. I thought that he did a great job, you know, portraying all those type of people.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the natural reaction, like when you're being invaded, is, well, we should prepare a resistance, mm-hmm. like, and there's a mistrust there, like. There, you can lead. You lead with the the candy, and then it's the switcheroo, which ultimately is what happens. Like for better or worse, like
it's sugaring the pill.
Yeah, sugaring. Yeah, exactly. But by the end of the story, again, he's not wrong. Like they find this. Oh, it's a good world. Like see, everything's going right, and then just turn. They had a long game. Mm-hmm. And even if they'd waited longer, they could have waited until, like, no one was left who True. Remembered a time before the Overlords. They were going to just do this anyway. They knew that this was going to happen. And how could you know? If you've given up control mm-hmm. to anybody else, how do you know that they don't have some kind of long plan to take back what they did, because you've given up everything that you had that could have stopped it?
Yeah, I mean, you just feel defeated, and they're sitting there in the situation where these overlords come and they let 2 decades go by, and nobody, just all in that time, he died off immediately, but in that time nobody else thought to resist. I couldn't imagine a world where people just became that complacent that quickly, just based on how aggressive we are as a species currently, for us just to be so like, okay, well, we're now going to, peace is great, but at what cost? They don't, like, what are they going to ask for us? You don't just give somebody world peace and utopian society without wanting something.
Yeah, I think in general, we're conditioned, if it's too good to be true, we're always like, wait, what?
Wait a minute. What do you want? What do you want?
I think it's very true of humans in general. So I can definitely see that.
We're not capable of truly selfless acts.
Yeah.
No, and, you know, unless... I mean, at the end of the day, and I don't... Most people just want to go about their day in the most minimal actions that they can take.
Yeah.
Now, for some people, some people that could be just literally sitting on the couch, and that's fine. For others, it might have to be, like, doing 40,000 things and climbing Mount Everest and then cooking dinner. But, each one has a definition of the minimal actions necessary to achieve what they want.
That was one of the scariest things for me in this whole utopia was, like, when they're, like, jobs are a tough commodity to come by. I'm like, what would I do with myself all day? You remove pain from the world. Like, what is there to, like, tell stories about? Like, we're here at AfterBuzz to we talk about TV all day because we love stories and we love art. Like, what is effectively art? Mm-hmm. And art comes from pain. Art comes from mistakes and problems. Without that, like, what do we do with ourselves? Like, we just would exist.
Yeah, it eradicates history as well. I mean, what stories are going to be new? What things are you going to be able to talk down to your kids about and inform them? Like, everything will have been just bland. There's nothing. There's no drastic events happening. There's no major world events, wars, changes, famine. That doesn't exist anymore. There's nothing is happening. There's no traffic. You know, you're sitting in this world of just boringness. I couldn't do it. I would lose it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just utopia. I feel like by definition, I mean, I've never seen a different representation of it, but it's just boring and bland.
Yeah.
Because that's the most tangible way we can describe it and interpret it. Unless there is some different way that I'm not aware of. anything else about episode one that you guys feel like we should discuss?
Well, I just want to say, like, I think the reveal at the very end of episode one of Karellen was handled perfectly. Like, I knew it was coming. I'm actually very curious about your reaction, because you didn't know that turn was coming with his appearance. Well, so what did you think as you saw it?
I mean, the first time I saw it, I was kind of, it was more of a, you know, sarcastic response. It was like, oh, of course. Like, you know, out of everything that you could possibly be, you come looking out just like what all religions have predicted the devil to embody. And they're like, well, we were right, guys. Like, you know, there's a lot of people looking over their shoulder like, I called that one. You know, that one's on me. And so I was like, okay, well, and it really, like, it had, like, with the devil. I just couldn't, I never would have imagined that. I never would have predicted that. I know the crossover with religion and how strong of a theme that is throughout the whole series. But I still would never have believed that the embodiment of the devil would be so well received. People didn't seem shocked. They weren't surprised. They were kind of like, oh, okay. And they had a while to get there, but still, without ever seeing them, do you just trust because it's comfortable and you've known it for so long that you just trust that's how it is? Or do you think you get a little bit more skeptical or like, okay, this can kind of changes things? And for me, it kind of changed. I was like, oh, I'm a little more skeptical of you now. Since you,
and you understood though why obviously Karellen was holding back and he kept saying, hey, I can't show myself to you right now.
Absolutely. I think that him, you know, not showing himself is the wisest move considering. Like, he clearly did his research about humanity, and I'm sure going through the books, and he's like, oh, there I am. Like, that's not going to be good. They really don't like this guy, and I look exactly like him. It's the same thing if you walk down the street and you saw, like, a wanted poster, and you're like, that guy looks way too much like me. I'm gonna hang out of this neighborhood for a bit, you know. Yeah. So I think it was a smart move.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of like him being embodied by being the visual embodiment of the devil, I thought has always been one of my favorite parts of this story because it's just such a fascinating turn and what it does later on in terms of like what the formation of our history with that image and the psychic connection or potential psychic connection. I think is a great. Very interesting philosophical just discussion point. But the idea of like, yeah, what if aliens showed up? They're not going to look like us. Like, there's a good chance they would show up and not even be bipedal, like, let alone like look anything like us. So that they very, like, real aliens could very well look like the devil. They could well look like something that we have already created. Like, how many different monsters have we drawn in some form? Like, if aliens did show up, there's a good chance there's like one Star Wars, Star Trek, or like other creature that like resembles them, at least in some way, and that would freak us out. We'd be like, who is Gene Roddenberry really? Like, we all the conspiracy theories and stuff. But this is the worst case scenario of what they could look like.
If, well, here's a funny thing, like, not related to Charles Lennon at all, but if you kind of look at it in some weird, demented way, you could take a look at Jesus and be like, oh, they must really hate him. They always have him killed on everything. They like this guy. He's active.
Yeah, he's getting at it. Look at that poor guy. They're hanging him up like they're sadistic. It's like a trophy in their house. Like,
yeah, so better not go as that guy.
They've really, I mean, but that's like the other side of it is like the aliens coming in, like, what would they maybe have misinterpreted from us? Like, we misinterpreted their image, effectively. Yeah. Or, well, I'll talk about my thoughts. Like, I think we potentially properly interpreted their image. But if they look down at us, they're like, they're wearing, like, jewelry of, like, his dead body, like, around their necks. I think they're celebrating about it. Like, they're still bragging.
Yeah, they're still bragging about it. And then he goes down, and he's like, all right, look, guys, like, that's done with, okay? Like, you can't all be right. Like, let's just stop doing that. It's sick. You need to stop wearing the jewelry.
Yeah, and these they go to this one place every Sunday, and they sing about it. Yeah. So I think that transitions us nicely into episode two, because at that point you couldn't avoid going religious, going into symbolism and all that. Mm-hmm. And how did you guys feel about that sort of? Because it was a slight tone shift.
Yeah, in general. Episode two.
There were tone shifts between each episode, I think.
Yeah.
Like, very much, like, these were very compartmentalized episodes.
Yeah.
Which made it interesting, in terms of, like, how sci-fi chose to show it. I mean, the story is very separated, so it made sense to do the three-part thing. The same thing they did last year with Ascension.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I will. Sorry, this is a little bit off topic, but it was just infuriated me so much that, like, sci-fi. I'm gonna say this directly to you. When I'm watching a show, I don't need you to give me previews of what I'm about to watch at every commercial break. I'm already here.
Jersey Shore started that trend.
But like,
or at least I'm gonna credit them in that regard.
Yeah.
But like reality, it's like a tease to like.
Yeah.
It because it's stupid anyway. Like, anybody who's watched, even the people who are enjoying it, know it's stupid.
Yeah.
But, like, you're telling a science fiction story with twists and turns, and you're giving me, like, I hate Nexdons, like, half the time. Like, let alone, like, Nexdons every 5 minutes.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Sorry, I had to get that out.
No, I mean, it is relevant for, you know, it is a TV thing, and yeah, I
agree.
What
was the original question?
The original question was the tone shift. So the tone did shift in your voice.
Yeah.
But not in the way we were asking. You know, and you kind of mentioned it, each episode is compartmentalized. And I think, as I said, for me, episode one was free will and choice. Mm-hmm. The second one is faith versus evil. And the third one's kind of life and death for me. But in terms of that shift from, you know, because we, at that point, you know, we didn't know what, episode three. So when it shifted tones and it got into the religious side of things, did you feel it was too heavy handed? How did you guys take it, like it, enjoy it?
I mean, I personally didn't think it was too heavy-handed. I think it was a nice representation of how people would react in that situation. And Peretta being one of the few people to actually hold on to that sense of religion, she's our guiding force throughout of faith. She's kind of the matriarch of all religion that is still happening currently. This is, hey, I'm it. And she's the only one, even with her mother having killed herself, dedicating her life to religion and then realizing, oh, there's no reason for it, you know. The overlords completely just wiped that out. She still stays faithful, and I think that by her staying so faithful, it really drives home that comparison between the devil imagery of the overlord and faith in itself and the religious aspect. Because, I mean, she's an emotional wreck just completely about the fact that they're even there.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, again, like, this is what was so perfect about this story, just in general, is that it does portray, like, what would a real human reaction be to this series of events happening. Aliens show up. That's going to make religion begin to get questioned right there. Because, like, other than Hinduism, there most religions, and I think Mormonism, but that's like a whole other thing. There really isn't a belief in alien beings. it's either not touched upon or outright not believed in. So you have to reevaluate faith in reaction to that. So some people are able to reorganize their beliefs in terms of like, okay, well, this changes what I believed, but I still believe it. Or what I thought was just totally wrong, because we're not like the center of the universe. Like, there's no way that like this random guy from 2,000 years ago. And I'm apologize if I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just it's the easiest
simplifying
religion, to use for the analogy. But this guy that like we picked up and was decided he was our Lord. These guys are a lot more Lord-like.
Yeah.
Than that guy. And we can see them. We can see miracles happening in front of us. So humanity must completely change. And because religion is such an integral part of our society, it's what wars are waged over. It's what people build their lives around. It's going to upend everything. And I think this show did a good job balancing that scale.
I think it just goes to show that the Deceivers is like, you know, the episode is named after in the second episode, because it's really where that faith is coming in conflict with the overlords. And these children that are selected, ultimately, they grew up in a world that never knew religion, because the overlords had always been there. So there was no need to teach religion. That was nothing that really, you know, came up as an upbringing, as a culture for them. So they are a lot more accepting of what's happening and are a lot more believable. Like, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, the overlord's up. This is the guy. Like, why did anyone before believe in Christianity or, you know, Hinduism or anything like that? Because it seemed pointless in comparison to what they were witnessing and they were raised under. You know, it's like their own religion was, you know, shown to them.
I would have liked to actually get into what, because they did they focused on the American reaction in this, and that's again, that's what the book is, because the book took place strongly in America and London. But like, I would have loved to see a Hindu reaction to this, because there is such. I think that's part of why they didn't, is like it would become a whole thing.
Yeah,
you need like five episodes at least,
because it wouldn't shake. To my understanding of it, it wouldn't shake a Hindu's faith, because this Hindu's believing in many gods and that there are creatures out there that could be any number of different beings that come down. Like, this would just be another god, maybe, that they hadn't met yet. So it wouldn't have interrupted their faith. I wonder, that's the question of, would Karelin have just found a way to stop their religion in other ways?
Yeah, and would that even be on his agenda? Is that even worth it? I mean, if they allow the Athens to exist, then he wouldn't try to prevent religion. If you still want to believe, then believe. That's on you. But I bet you that they'd be walking around pretty cocky. Be like, we called it. That's I'll be jealous.
Yeah, but so in episode two, like, we have that moment where, what do you think it was that like bent the cross and like choked her out? Like, was it Tommy or was it Karelin? Or
yeah, that's weird.
Because that's one of the questions that wasn't answered. Is like why she got choked by her chain.
You know, I don't want to say Karelin, because historically he's never really interacted with them in that way. And up until the very end, they don't do things actionary in that sense. Although the you know, you can counter argue me with, you know, they got rid of disease, so that's so I don't know, but my heart says not Karelin at that time. I think it's too forceful.
Yeah, but so then was it Tommy or like the Overmind, I guess, working through them?
Yeah, I would like to believe there's just a reaction from a child. You know, a child's tantrum. He still doesn't know what's happening to him. He's reacting to. You know, he was screaming. It was a bloody murder because he could hear and feel something and felt like he was going somewhere. That's a lot of an emotional toll on a child. So I think that for him, it's more of just a tantrum that was an item that was near her, that everything was being compacted. It's like, I'm sure his dad was a little pained when he got thrown against a wall. Yeah. You know, he might have bent something or two. So it was a rough thing for a rough couple of days for him.
I mean, in some ways, it's no different than like one of the kids of X-Men when early on with their powers. Yeah. They don't know what they're doing and they just cause something to happen. I mean, how many times have we seen Magneto, you know, in the German camp, you know, destroy that gate.
Yeah.
So I think it's something similar along that line.
I agree.
Yeah. So I guess, and that, so then that became, like, that was her interpretation of something that was not directed at religion. It wasn't like, you're wearing a cross, so I'm going to choke you. It was just, you were there, and this thing happened. Now you are left to your own devices to interpret it, and you interpreted it to be this, to be, you're being attacked because you're religious, even though you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And if you're one of the only people that are still, you know, bound by religion, and your cross, even wearing, like, since you're a child, it gets bent by what who you think is the devil or some source of the devil, then, I mean, you're just going, well, yeah, A plus B equals C. For her, it's the most logical conclusion to what she was presented with.
You know, but, you know, the interesting part that she has to kind of learn, and just in general, faith, like, faith by its very definition is not supposed to be logical in many ways.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, and that's why, counter to that, you have science that tries to be, you could say science is its own religion in many ways, because it tries to understand things from a much, much different angle, you know, and get to the bottom of things, and things are stirred there all the time. If, you know, we believe one thing today, and then all of a sudden, basically science is the equivalent of, like, hey, if all the ducks in the world that we ever see are black, then all ducks are black. Yeah. All it takes is one white duck to come along and dispute that theory.
Like, and that's science.
And then we're like, that's not a duck.
Yeah,
that's just
a
bird.
I don't believe that's a duck.
Yeah, don't prove me wrong. That's not a duck. That's a swan.
When have you ever seen a white duck?
Yeah, crazy.
I've never seen a blue duck either. Really Madison reference.
I like that the reflection of science too, and its relation to faith. Where nowadays the comparison is between science and faith. And if you're a scientist, then ultimately people are thinking, oh, you probably aren't very faithful. But in the situation that they're in, Milo believes that science is being killed by the overlords being there. But I just personally feel in a situation like that, it would actually advance the excitement for science. If you see these ships, you see this great technology, I would feel giddy as a scientist going, oh my God, look at all this technology that we're going to explore. Regardless of being a utopian society, some people's utopian society would be to get to learn how those things operate. And I think Milo being the only one, you know, really at the forefront of that charge, It's a little surprising. I would assume that science had one representative and religion had one representative.
Yeah, well, I think what was so interesting about that is, like, because science in a lot of ways is a very religious thing. Like, when you get into, like, theoretical physics, like, it's a lot of belief. Yeah. Like, you use the text that you have, the information that you have. It's more based in, like, the ideas of what you can prove. And that's why it's easier for a certain type of people to latch onto. Mm-hmm. But when you have it stripped away, like, when you have the pursuit of science, I guess what I should say, the pursuit of science and the pursuit of faith are very similar, because you are so focused on what you want, what you believe, and what you are trying to eventually get to, that if someone tried to stop it, you would lose it.
Yeah.
I think that when he says, like, you're taking away science and scientific pursuit, it really comes down to, like, he may have these big questions, and it's not like there weren't more scientific plateaus to reach, but most scientific discovery is because we were trying to do one thing and we accidentally did another. We were trying to cure medicine and we accidentally created this synthetic material.
Yeah.
We were trying to get into space. We accidentally made Tang. Like, ridiculous example. But that basic principle. So when there's nothing to strive for, there's no accidental science. There's no one looking for more things to do. All he wants is answers on the overlords, and everyone else is just like, no, man, we're good.
We're cool. We're good.
Disease free. I got a baseball field in my backyard now.
Well, speaking of diseases, I mean, this was a tough episode for Ricky. They can't have kids, and he's terminally ill.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's...
Especially as the representative. You know, he's like, you chose me to die. You know, out of anybody that can be saved, I know you could cure me. And he's put in a position where I would just be like, dude, come on, man. Like, I've done so much work. You just come back to tell me that I can't have a kid and it was your doing? I mean, that would break that trust that I had with Karellen to the core. I mean, how could you still believe and, you know, follow this guy and help him and work towards what you may think is for the future goals of Earth, but in reality, it's completely destroying your last couple years or, you know, months or whatever on Earth.
Yeah.
Well, this is the... What happens when you have all the power is you're like, well, this is going to be better for you. Mm-hmm. I'm deciding what's better for you. So I've taken away your ability to have kids, even though it's what you want most mm-hmm. in the world. The him getting sick was, I guess, just like one of those things. Like, that's what happens when you take a guy into space. Like, people get sick, and sometimes in ways you can't predict. Yeah. So, like, I a credit to Charles Dance and to the makeup team, CGI team, when he came down and was looking at him, like, you could see the sadness in his, in Karellen's eyes. Like, you felt like he was just like, I don't want to deliver this bad news. Like, that's what it looks like when you have to tell someone something really bad.
And, I mean, imagine the... For him, this was just another pit stop. Earth was another pit stop for Karellen. He's going planet to planet as a job for the Overmind. This is what his duty is, and he's going to spend his life doing this. And so for him actually to have a relation with a human, and he found this one person out of everybody on Earth, and he's actually going to be able to relate to him and have sympathy and empathy for the situation he's going through and care for him as though he is kind of a father in that sense. So he said he had 24 kids. Maybe he's got 25 now, you know, an adopted son. But I feel like that for him has got to be more painful than it would be to actually have the disease, because he's like, this is what I do for a job, and if you get connected to one person on the planet or numerous people on each planet you go to before it gets destroyed, that's his hell. You know, that would be a hell for him.
Yeah, and what I did like about that was that it didn't go over the top where all of a sudden now Karellen defaults in some sort of way of like, you know what? Yeah, they mess with you. Let me, we're going to get them back. Because you could see that, obviously, that's not the original book either. But you could see other sci-fi movies kind of going that route. Yeah. Of like, you know what? I'm really sorry. I'm going to help you. Here's the truth. Apart from that, I mean, that's kind of episode two in many ways. Anything else that we might have missed? I know we could, like I said at the top of the episode, we can dive into all of this stuff so much deeper, do scene by scene, but we're kind of keeping it to a little bit more broad stroke today.
Yeah.
Only so much time.
That's right. We don't have 6 hours like they did. All right, so episode three, I've coined it the life and death themed episode called The Children. Mm-hmm. And right away we get into the children. We meet young Jennifer 4 years later with her powers.
She definitely came across as the sweet, cute little girl, but just with that little demon inside of her. I mean, it felt just, the parents knew she had this power, and seeing her, like, I still would be scared of her. Even as a parent, I would be nervous around my child. And like, I've seen what you can do. I've seen the world chanting your name. I don't know if I would be able to handle that, you know, as the parent. He went through so much. Jake went through so much as just a father from when it was just before the child was even born. So her being 4 years old and up, it's unbearable as a parent to see just your child being torn apart. And it's not even your child. Your child is a vessel for the Overmind.
Yeah, that was, I mean, the whole thing of Jennifer was like, it was a little weird. Just to clear one thing up, because I think watching it wasn't quite, what was she pregnant already and they sort of like touched her, or did they, because when I was watching it, I was like, did Karellen just impregnate her with that light? Like, like, consent, bro. Like,
you can't do that. Buy her a drink.
Yeah, that's rule number one. Yeah, you know what? That's a tough one. I mean, obviously, kind of, you could tie it back to the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
You know, and how she got impregnated with the Lord Jesus.
Well, that's what I thought they were doing for a minute. And again, just playing to that religious aspect of, like, is this the child of the devil? Like, and I was like watching, I was trying to remember, like, what happened in the book? Did she, like, pop out, like, a little, like, demon baby?
I don't quite remember. And again,
she didn't have like an overlord child.
Yeah. No.
But like, that's when I was like questioning, because it looked like the light impregnated mm-hmm. her, just the way that they shot it. So like, this is one of the, I guess, a negative for me is that like, that was not really clear what they were going for, not in a good ambiguous way. It was just sort of, I think that they were trying, what it was supposed to be was, they were touching her already growing child.
Yeah.
And making it the leader for the Overmind.
But how was that selected? I mean, when the Overlords first came, she was just in, you know, she was a high schooler, and she was in love with Jake, and obviously we jumped to the future, and they're still together. And I think it's they're starting up that family. Why was she chosen? Why was this family chosen amongst all the families in the world? Where this child at this time, this is the moment that it needs to begin.
It's one of those. It's no different than Ricky versus the blind lady from Korea.
They looked for traits beyond what we can see, and they decided based on something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that it's nice to think that there's still, I'll say, good happenstance in the world, even though you can interpret it as bad happenstance. it's one of those things that's not really fully explained, but I think speaks to the religious side of the, you know, it's not, as frustrating as it may be, it's not necessarily for us to interpret or ever know, and the more you try to dig into it and search for a reason, number one, the more frustrated you can get. Number two, the more wrong you can be.
Sure.
So, but you know, here she is. She's the Jean Grey of of this world and leading it. I mean, what I liked about that, you know, episode one was very kind of slow, and then episode two ramped up, and then episode three, we got a ticking time bomb. We gotta get these kids to the Overlord.
Children of the Corn, when they're like driving out and there's just like this field of children in the streets, just like, that's the scariest thing ever. Like, I could handle like a demon walking down the street, like, to me I can visually handle that. Like, it would be freaky at first, but like, I can do it. The children lined up just staring at the car as I'm trying to leave, just children just following with their eyes as you walk. It's just like, that is no.
It's like, nope.
So, I mean, the babies in general are kids. They're supposed to be cute. They're supposed to be innocent. They represent the future of everything. Mm-hmm. And so, not that at this point in time, they know that this is literally the last remnants of what humanity is. Yeah. It's a scary thing as an audience when you do look at it that way. But they're so mindless.
Exactly, as they are mindless, are they really the proper representation for Earth? I mean, they take the children mostly because they're innocent, and they are added to the collective mind of the Overmind. But are they, what makes them, I mean, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the know-how. I mean, they're definitely not as corrupt as adults would be. But I just feel like they all are kind of a little vapid. Like, they're just lemmings wandering around Earth, preventing and then following Jennifer. And I think, it's just creepy and seems pointless in the overall aspect of who to choose, who to get the collective information, who to add to the Overmind.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, that by the end of it is the big question is, like, what is the Overmind really going for? Mm-hmm. Like, I get this, like, the collected consciousness of the universe and that would be beyond anything that we could think of. What Clark was going for there is, like, that's the closest that we could get to God in a scientific sense, is that, like, you just collect, what is the collected mind of every species, every intelligent species that has ever existed on the planet? Mm-hmm. What does that do going forward?
Yeah.
Like, how does that thing behave? But what was unclear to me was, like, why did the planet have to get destroyed? Why couldn't you just take all of this generation of children to become, like, the part of the collective consciousness and then be like, all right, humankind, we're done with you. Go have fun.
Yeah.
And not just the adults. Like, why cut off more children? Yeah, why blow up the planet? That was why I say, like, the third episode I had some issues with, is that, like, that wasn't, like, there's a lot of great television that's not clear, that is left ambiguous. Yeah. The Leftovers is a perfect example of, like, good television that's, like, a great story that I don't have the answers and I didn't need them.
Yeah.
This I lost a little bit. And this is, like, one of the things that in the original book, like, I still love, but there was a little bit of wanting. Yeah. It was more so, it felt more so here. I think because on TV you expect more answers.
Yeah. A little bit more reveal imagery.
Yeah, it's just the the crutch of the medium is like you expect more answers mm-hmm. on TV or movies.
And Carilla did say that we were advancing to a point of being able to achieve something that we couldn't handle. Mm-hmm. And that is why he showed up when he did, with the first interaction is humankind was on the precipice of interstellar travel, and now it's the Overmind's time to intervene. It's like, okay, now Earth has now come on the map, and we got Adam to the Overmind. Like, it's almost like that's the scale, is once we get to that point, is the only species that is doing interstellar travel are the Overlords and the Overmind, as, you know, doing the bidding of the Overmind. And maybe that's the benchmark where, with civilization, they've now reached the point of interstellar travel. They are now cognitively able to be added to the Overmind. So, I mean, for me, that's how I kind of connected why.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good why of it, or how of it. You know, an interesting thing for me, the way I look at it, you know, if you adhere to the Big Bang Theory, you know, kind of started in the way we can conceive it, think of like almost just a ball, right? A mm-hmm. giant ball that exploded and created all of this. And so, you know, in many ways, all things being cyclical, maybe this is kind of the natural progression back into this ball, and then it'll reset everything, and we'll have human beings again in this whole world, and then it'll just go on for, you know, light years, I guess, however we measure whatever the biggest measurement of time and space can be, which I know is light years, but let's say like 40 billion trillion light years of this kind of cyclical thing.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's very interesting about like the Overlords by the end of this is there's a very real political analogy going on here, and I think it was just as much a play in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And like, so especially with the original, the book version of Ricky being with the UN, mm-hmm. he sort of was a parallel in a lot of ways to Karelin. Like, it raises the question, like, who gave the Overlords and the Overmind the right to decide that we are at that stage where humankind is going to be done, that we're going to be out of our depth with this kind of technology, that we can't control it, but the Overlords can. Much the way, like, what gives the U.S. the right or the U.N. the right to decide, like, this developing country can have nuclear technology, mm-hmm. for example. And I don't know what the right answer is, because these are incredibly complicated topics.
There was a funny skit for the 30th, right? It was the 30th anniversary for Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, recently.
And so they did a skit, and I forget which show it was, late night show, but, you know, when Emma Brown's kind of catching up with what that future actually is, mm-hmm. and it's an alternate one.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, oh, you guys have these smartphones that can do all these great calculations. Yeah, we mostly play just games on them. He's like, what? Great, Scott! And so I think in many ways, if you kind of interpret it that way, when we have so much technology that we could do so many great things with, but we use it for the, you know, for Tinder.
Yeah. how else are you going to find love?
We use it for love, the most important purpose of all.
Interstellar teaches that.
Exactly.
So, I think you can interpret, you know, as joking as I am, maybe that's an interpretation of it that you can apply.
That, like, we're just not responsible with our technology.
Not at all.
Again, like, that's the big question, is that I think Clark was originally asking with it, and that the series is asking again with today. It's like, who is supposed to have that right? Like, is it fair mm-hmm. to the person being taken away, to having these things taken away? Is it responsible? Like, the series doesn't take a side. Mm-hmm. It just, but I think it absolutely presents that question of where do you draw the line of, like, too much interference versus interference for the sake of safety.
Well, we also don't ask this. I mean, what gives me the right when I feed my dogs versus when I don't feed my dogs, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you can kind of trickle it down in that way. And
feed your dogs.
So. Yeah, just feed them. Like, don't ever not feed them.
Yeah, but even the times that they choose, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's very specific. And, you know, I'm basically their overlord, and I'm, you know, and but it goes beyond just dogs. It goes to kind of all, you can examine in that way. We were just doing In the Heart of the Sea on Popcorn Talks Anatomy of a Movie, mm-hmm. and, you know, how do you treat whales and so on and so forth. So I think that's a part that perhaps we don't examine as much because of this work. We just kind of think of aliens and go upwards from there, but you can kind of trickle it down as we're the overmind, and how are we treating the Earth?
Yeah, I think that in where the world that we're at, that the overlords, and it's always just in our society currently, it's those with the power and the intelligence and the wherewithal to do so generally do control and do lead. Mm-hmm. And the overlords are a perfect example of that. We do by no means parallel their intellect or their ability even closely. Like, we're peasants. You know, it's like the Stone Age comparison to who they are. So, of course, they're going to look at us like we are your dogs. You know, they're going to see us and be like, oh, how cute. Look at them running around, you know. We'll give them utopia, and they're just going to be all happy and mindless about it, just like if you get a playpen for a cat. It's just going to be running around and happy. It doesn't know what else is out there.
Yeah, they look so cute, but don't put the vase near the edge. Like, they're going to break it.
Exactly.
Like, don't leave the leftovers near on the counter where the dog can get to it. Phil knows what I'm talking about.
I do.
That's humankind. We're going after the chicken wings on the counter, even though we really shouldn't.
You know, I think it's worthy of exploring. So, you know, hey, listener out there, feel free to be better.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that I think this show, just to bring it back to the show, it does very well, is that it asks that question without. There's such a danger when you get into that kind of territory to become preachy, because most stories have to pick a side. This one does it in a way where it asks the question but doesn't give you an answer. It's left to the viewer to interpret, to first of all find that question there. I think it is absolutely there, but to find it and then decide from the story what is the right thing to do and how can that apply to my real world.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at Jerry, right? Because I think he's a good example. He's self-appointed himself to New Athens, and so what gives him the right to kind of do this? But obviously he has enough followers to keep this going, and as he says, you know, I doubt the day will end, but if it does, I forget exactly what he says, but we'll give up or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but he has a strong belief in what he's doing, and as I mentioned, self-appointed.
Yeah, and some of the most dangerous leaders are the ones that are self-appointed, and they end up getting that following. I mean, it's a dangerous place to be, and especially in a city. I understand why Jake took his family there, like, to find solace, but personally, going into a society where there is a self-appointed leader with people that are following him blindly, I'd just be like, maybe we're going to go somewhere else. We'll do our own thing. Go camping somewhere, you know? Like, just
so then that just starts up a whole different, like, the new Athens.
new Athens. All right, guys, we're not like that. You don't need to follow me. We'll do an election. A democratic new Athens. I like that.
I mean, that's the thing is, Athens. I love the idea of new Athens. Like, it's that's because that's where you can go. And like, he's like, we even have opera.
Yeah.
Like, never heard anybody be so excited about opera that wasn't my grandmother. But it's like, yeah, you latch onto those things that made humanity humanity. When you took those things away, it was like, they called it like humanity 2.0. Yeah. Like, but maybe people don't want to be humanity 2.0. Maybe they didn't need that update. Like, stop pushing your update on us. I don't want to download it. It's going to break everything.
Yeah.
It's like the old South Park iTunes episode. Do you agree to these terms? you will be mindless and boring, except.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, all you're reading is those top lines, like, no disease, no hunger, everyone will be taken care of. But then that, like, little fine print, by the way, we're going to take all of your children, put them into this thing called the Overmind, and eventually they will destroy the planet.
Hey, sweetie, did you read this fine print? No, just accept. Don't worry about it.
It was size 0.1 font.
I don't have time for that. I'm trying to listen to Beastie Boys here.
You know I can't find my glasses.
Hilarious.
but that's what people have done here. Like, they accepted the help of the overlords without worrying about where it was going to go.
The terms and conditions.
Yeah, that's exactly. The overlords had a lot of terms and conditions. And just down to the fact that they weren't willing to reveal anything about themselves, their home world. Like, the fact that even after Karellen revealed himself, there was only ever him. Mm-hmm. There was never another one on Earth.
Not on Earth, yeah.
That we ever saw. Like, towards the end, we saw the second one. Why should we have trusted him? Like, if someone's going to keep secrets from us intentionally, of course, like, they have another game. Like, you don't... It with something as crucial as changing the world,
yeah.
You don't hold things back unless there's a reason that... Like, unless we would be scared of the reasons.
And yeah. I think we would. I think that if had we known why they were there, we would have been like, whoa, no, we're good. Like,
it would have been...
as a world, we'll opt out.
They would have got on the phone and be like, all right, Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, like, we need you guys.
You guys need to get out here.
Nah, dude, we're just actors. No, we need you.
You don't understand. You know, I've watched that movie a lot of times.
Get Bruce Willis in. He's good in space.
Indeed. Let's talk about Ricky and kind of his... storyline in the hotel and everything like that. And why even put this in, really, into it?
Yeah, I mean, it connected us to the human side of this. Like, we needed somebody to latch on to, and we had Milo and his storyline as well. But we needed this guy that's a spokesman of Earth. Like, we needed to know why he's like who he is, like why he was chosen. I think that. That was the idea, like somebody who can love that strongly and care mm-hmm. at the end of the day. Like, that's who is a representative of Earth. And it just, I think, gave us, like...
So he had good midichlorian?
Yeah.
Is that what we... Right? That's the term?
No, that term doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, God.
They've removed it from everything. We connected to him, so it was useful for that, and I think it just helped the story to have like more than just aliens going on, like, because there wouldn't be. Every person involved is going to have a relationship that's being affected by what's around them.
Mm-hmm. It was just weird that his was represented by his deceased wife. That, like, that's the relationship, and that's how we get to know him, is bringing in a ghost. I mean, for lack of a better term, that's what she was. She was just a projection of somebody that he had known, which I think is incredible in its own right, that they were able to tap into who he is and actually pull out that memory in such detail. Like, what if they have that type of power? Why, I mean, I understand why everybody was complacent, you know, and why he's really the only one to actually stand up and have a casual conversation with the Overlord as though he is just like his neighbor down the street. And it's because I think he was shown firsthand the power that they have. And so Ricky's in a situation where he's like, I can't argue with it. I'm the first one to see this, and it is incredibly believable. He tapped in and projected my deepest, darkest love that a current wife probably wouldn't be too amped on and wasn't.
Yeah, that's the other thing we didn't talk. In episode one, you know, when they came and invaded, they took on the bodies of deceased people that they cared about. And so, I mean, that just showed great power and great strength right off the bat. I'm like, whoa, okay. I bow down to you.
You won.
You're just like, all right, that was weird. All right, I'm listening. What's your next trick?
Yeah, exactly.
And forces you to, again, like, it forces you to question faith and religion and all that immediately. Like, the fact that they're able to, because there's so many things at work there. That means that they can read your mind. They can create something from the image in your mind and project it to every person on the planet.
They also, like, I mean, they created a facility instantly. An entire room. And it's just like, boom, here's a facility, and this is like what the transistor communicator was between pregnant Jennifer and, you know, the Overmind, is a facility that they just built out of nothingness.
Yeah.
And just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I would be flabbergasted.
The Overmind does wonders.
That's right.
So let's start getting into the Overmind. You know, that's Milo's kind of mission, and in general with his relationship, I felt it worked well. You know, this was the last time that he didn't know the outcome. It could have been it. Mm-hmm. He would probably never even return. We know that he returns to Earth, obviously, as an audience, because that's the, you know, the front end of the whole thing. But it's still, nonetheless, a hard decision to go out. And I mean, that in many ways is scientific curiosity, to go to the depths that you can with no predictable outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely bold. Would you have stayed on the ship, or do you think that you would have also returned had that last scene not been shown to us in the very beginning?
Me, myself, or
you personally?
Me, personally. At that point, I probably would have just stayed.
Yeah.
You know?
On the ship?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I'd be like, well, I guess I could go, like, play with that orca.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I've got some friends, at least, like, relatable. He's, like, he's the new whisperer to all animals on Earth. He could technically be the new Noah, if you look at it that way. He's like, I'm on a ship with all the animals that are existing still from mankind.
He's like, do you have one woman?
Like, tell me you froze one. Just tell me. Come on.
They did. Unfortunately, she was dead.
They literally froze
his girlfriend or found her present.
Yeah, it didn't go so well. We tried, but it just didn't work out.
That's cool, though. I mean, out of all the people, like, if I'm the last one, they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, we grabbed your girlfriend. I'm like, oh, dude, thanks. Like, you didn't have to do that. That's incredible.
And you walk in the room, that wasn't... It doesn't help me.
And Carellan's totally like, no, it's the same thing, dude. Like, he's like, what are you talking about? Like, he's totally justifying that she's dead and how okay it is. And you're like, whoa, no, this is not okay. Stop trying to make me feel better about this situation.
He does the same thing with Ricky, too. He's like, you can live in this memory forever, this happy memory forever. Why wouldn't you want to? He's like, because it's not real. Like, he misses the point. Like, why, like, of, like, that Ricky and Milo both, it was about the human connection that they had to these other people. That was what made them human. That was what made them love and separated them from the overlords.
And it shows Corellon's empathy for them. Like, you can see he's learning about it as, you know, doing the bidding of the Overmind. He's actually finding some compassion and empathy, and he's connecting. He's offering an internal reality in what he believes is his perfect world. For one, and for Milo, he's offering him to be the last human being and to travel with them and be a part of it and continue his knowledge and continue his learning. So it's a situation where he's going planet to planet as doing the bidding of the Overmind, but at the same time, he's like connecting, and maybe it's starting to doubt the Overmind and doubt what they're doing and whether it's worth it. I found that incredibly interesting.
He's frustrated that they don't get to be part of the Overmind.
Yeah.
They're the assistants, is what it turns out to be.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's kind of interesting is... let me get your take on it, because, you know, Zach and I, we didn't know how they would do it, but we kind of knew the tone that it would end on, right? You going into it and... completely fresh. How did you think it would even end? Even just tonally.
I didn't believe it was going to be ending in such a, you know.
I mean, final. The title kind of gives a child's, you know, when you have a name like Child's of End, kind of like, oh, things may not go so well.
I didn't think it was going to be such an epic ending. I didn't think it would be the total annihilation of Earth. I mean, I know we saw those signs, but I thought those were more of just like visions into what may could be. I didn't take those as fact of the planet actually erupting from its core. So I kind of felt like the children would end, but Earth kind of would still go on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see it being so definitive and humanity just ceasing to exist, especially at the beginning when you see Milo sitting on the couch. It's like, okay, there's hope. Like, it opened with me with hope. I'm like, oh, he's the last guy. Maybe, you know, there's something you do. Damon was on Mars by himself. He had no hope. Last guy on the planet. Totally worked out for him, so.
Spoiler.
Yeah, by the way, the decision to go down, we have a few people joining us live in the channel. Michael Blade says, why the hell did Milo stay on the Earth? I would have been, oh, well, everyone's gone. I'm out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, is there another planet with anyone that kind of looks like me?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be exact, just kind of close. They're, you know, a little rudimentary in their knowledge. That's fine.
Or, like, he's like, I saw the Martian. Just, like, drop me on Mars. Like, leave me with, like, a tent. I'll be fine.
Yeah. And be a rover.
Yeah. Or the beach ball from Castaway.
Yeah.
I guess...
Wilson, just keep him company.
Like, I get, like, it was some... There was somewhat of a scientific discovery thing that, like, he could only achieve by going down there, but I didn't really see from that ending what the result was. Like, he watched the Earth get destroyed, but what could he see from there that they couldn't see from up above?
Yeah, no, I mean, just the fact that Jennifer was in the whirlwind, but they saw all. Like, and they knew what was going to happen. They've done this to numerous planets. So.
But they set it up that, like, him being there because they couldn't be on the planet.
Yeah, because no one's done that before.
That he was volunteering to do something that they had never been able to do.
Yeah, again, I don't see the benefit of it.
Yeah, like, I didn't know what it was at the end of the day.
Milo kind of just made a bold emotional call, probably a little bit of regret once he saw the you know floor beneath him disappearing. He's like, "Ooh, bad call."
But I did really like that ultimate, like where it ended on him saying, "Like, please just remember us, like something to remember us by," and the music, music, the idea that music is the last remaining thing of Earth.
And I'm just glad it's not a boy band. Something like that. Like, you know, I'm just glad Bieber's not the last remaining thing chosen.
Baby.
They're like driving by in their spaceship. They're like, oh, this place used to be hopping.
It'd be real ironic if, like, the last remaining song was like, guess who's back? 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 And they're just like, I don't... Who?
No one. I hope somebody's coming back soon.
But it goes back to, like, what is humanity? Humanity is art, and art is built out of the human experience, which is life, death, pain, pleasure, all of that wrapped into one thing.
Yeah.
And so art is the last thing that will remain.
Which, if we had to choose one thing, I think that's a great option.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The ultimate time capsule.
It's the only thing that could exist.
It's literally just like, what, like a speaker sitting where the Earth used to be playing some classical music?
Yeah, there's just an iHome.
That's what they did. They left it there. Like, they're like, for anybody who happens upon it, it's just like a boombox, like, floating in space.
Man, you know what? Go See the Gods must be crazy. Imagine if that was, like, the weird space version of the Coke bottle.
You mean like when you put a note in?
No. Remember, you guys haven't seen The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Well,
never mind. Basically, someone drops a Coke bottle into the wilderness of Africa, and they're like so confused, like, what is this? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think we're getting... I think by going so far off topic, I think that means we've about ended our discussion of childhood ed. Any last thoughts, Zach Wilson?
Especially in the... I thought it was very... it was maybe a little overdone, but I appreciated it. In the first episode, there were a lot of sci-fi influences that were very clear. Like, the Close Encounters, like, reference with all the stuff turning on in the house and, like, the light coming through. It was like, okay... You've seen Close Encounters. We get it. But there were subtle ones that I really liked. They had a couple of music cues from 2001. Mm-hmm. And like when the overlords are first like arriving in the first part, which I thought was very good. I mean, it's Clark. So like using that made a lot of sense because the Overmind and the overlords are such a similar idea to what ends up being the rest of his work, including 2001. He uses a lot of those same ideas throughout his books.
Yeah. I'd just like to give another shout out to Charles Dance. I just think that his role throughout the whole thing, it's what kind of kept me just captivated by each one of the episodes, and it just kept you going because he's mysterious in himself and how it's presented and how Corellon is such an embodiment of, like what you were saying earlier, the UN and where we were in the 50s and just the differences that haven't changed. I mean, the strong superior, the powerful, they come in, and that's who everybody ends up following. And Corellon was that perfect embodiment of that, and the fear that goes alongside with that. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing, but at the same time, it's terrifying because this person can do things that we can't even fathom or understand or comprehend as to how they can. So for me, just he moved the story along. It really just brought the whole thing together in a sense of mystique and, you know, wonderment.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I gotta commend, one of the things we didn't talk about was the visual effects. I thought, you know, the fact that they did this in such a, you know, I don't know what the budget was, but I think they utilized it in the best of ways, and, you know, to a degree I wish they had a bigger budget, but at the same time, what they had, they did a lot with it.
Yeah.
And I give them so much credit for that, and, you know, the fact that every, you know, it seems like it's going to be a thing where Zach mentioned Ascension last year, and they had this year. So, you know, sci-fi is really getting back to their roots, so I got to commend them for going on this journey and creating something. That is difficult. I mean, you're basically creating almost, with commercials, what, about a 5-hour and 15-minute movie?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Sci-fi is, like, in this world where, like, everyone's doing sci-fi stories now. Every network has some kind of science fiction show. Sci-fi went through this phase of like trying to figure out what are we gonna, as the sci-fi network, what do we do? Yeah. We can't air wrestling all day. Yeah. That's what, like, we're like, all right, we'll just change the name. It's Sci-Fi now. But like, so they tried the more slow, like the more ridiculous things like Sharknadoes, yeah, and all that from the Asylum, the Z Nation, which, like, not that those things are bad, but it wasn't what sci-fi used to be with, like, Battlestar Galactica. Now, yeah, they're like, okay, we're just going to go into that heady, heavy science fiction that no one else is really doing. No one's doing space stories anymore.
Yeah.
But we will. Dark Matter, Killjoys, Childhood's End, The Expanse. Like, we're going to throw the craziest shit at you.
The Magicians.
Yeah, The Magicians. The craziest shit we can think of. And I'm really looking forward to the next big one from them is going to be 3001, A Space Odyssey, which is one of my all-time favorite books, like, let alone just Clark novels, mm-hmm, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, they find Frank Poole's body floating in space. And Frank Poole being the other astronaut who, mm-hmm, Hal kills, and like they send him off. And bring him back to life in the year 3001. And then,
something
like,
to look for.
Yeah. And that's going
to
be, that's on their docket for.
So I that'll think, be December 2016?
I believe so. It might be 2017, but it's in the work. I know it's being developed and produced right
that's
now.
Right.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you to those of you who partook in the live chat. You know, I know we didn't advertise as much. It kind of came together last minute, but we do appreciate it. If you didn't get to join us live, that's okay too. You know, that's what DVR and on demand is for. So comment below. We appreciate your thoughts and opinions. As Zach said, it's a very heady movie and therefore there's a lot to discuss. So, you know, discuss with us and have a good 2015. Yeah. And we'll see you in Utopia.
Yeah.
Zach, where can the people find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. And also here at AfterBuzz on a whole number of different shows. Next year, I'm going to be talking Agent Carter, Better Call Saul, and a whole host of others. You can find them on my Twitter as well. And keep up with me. I want to know what you guys thought of Childhood's End. Tweet it at me.
And you can find me anywhere on the internet at Keith W. Black. And you can also catch me on the Man in the High Castle after show.
Darn right. And follow us here at AfterBuzz TV, yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Have a great year and a great 2016.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.